You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework. Here's your host, DevOps Institute CEO, Jane Grohl.
Everyone, I'm Jane Grohl, CEO of the DevOps Institute. We're on video this time for the Humans of DevOps podcast, and I'm really excited to be joined by my friend, and I know I'm going to pronounce your name incorrectly, Gautam Palapa. Close? Awesome. Got a big thumbs up on that. Who's one of DevOps Institute's ambassador, and I'll let him explain a little bit more about his background. Welcome, Gautam.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jane. Always a pleasure to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and then let's talk a little bit about why this topic that we're going to talk about today, which really has to do with kind of new ways of working. I'll let you introduce the topic, has become a passion area for you.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm a global CTO at VMware. I focus on business transformation, where I work with customers and help them on their transformation journey, not only from a cultural and a people perspective, but also from a process and technology aspect. I've been in this realm for, oh gosh, I want to say 6 years now, and I've been a Lean Six Sigma black belt and an agilist for a very long time, and now part of the DevOps Institute and an ambassador as well. And it's really exciting when you can take all these various methodologies and have the right mindset and implement it in the current pain points of a pandemic that we're going through right now. So that's a really cool thing. And being stuck at home for over 8 months, I have had the pleasure of running multiple social experiments, unfortunate for my kid, but but one of the things that, I've written about this in a couple of articles as well, is that, you know, people in technology, especially parents, they look towards technology constructs and practices that they do in their day-to-day life and see if it can extend to their personal life. And before the pandemic, it used to happen a little, where we used to occasionally dabble into agile methodologies and DevOps approaches, like more automation, reducing the pain, reducing the manual toil in things, like giving that's a justification to buy a better coffee maker every time, things like that, right? But with this pandemic and with everyone existing in the same, cohabiting in the same space, it becomes much more easier and much more interesting from my point of view, where people are running a lot of social experiments and trying to help supplement the development of their children in when they're coping with a remote learning world.
Yeah, that's really interesting to me, because I think the biggest challenge that parents face generally is helping their children grow, be healthy, be happy, to learn, and to be good citizens of society, but also to have that balance between work and social, right? And then, you know, of course, hopefully having a good psychological balance as well. And this pandemic, I think, has really presented challenges to everyone, whether you have young children or not, in order to be able to maintain a psychological balance, in order to be able to maintain a work balance. There used to be a really distinct separation between your work day and your family life or your home life, right? If you went to the office, you left. Yep. I've worked from home for a long time. Sometimes that's a challenge, but there was a distinctiveness to that. And now you enter children who are having to, or teachers who are trying to figure out how to teach, parents who are serving as teachers. You know, in my household, my son is 24, so he's not a young child, but he's working from home too. So my husband, my son, and I are all, you know, kind of have our little workspaces, and mm-hmm. we meet in the break room, otherwise known as the kitchen. That's changed the dynamic. My dog likes it, but it's changed the dynamic of the household. So let's talk a little bit about applying some of the principles that we have been advocating for a long time in terms of work life, and how does that apply to personal?
So I'm glad you brought up the psychological safety and the psychological aspect of things, because when we look back at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the most fundamental needs are the basic needs, right? Those are the physiological needs of food, water, warmth, rest, and then safety, right? Which is the security and the sense of having that safety around the physical environment that you're in. That, for the most part, I mean, it was scary in March and April when we were scared about food, water, logistics, and even getting TPE, all those various scares. And then it stabilized. And so the basic needs are met now. And what we're seeing is the psychological needs are still not being met. So the belongingness, the intimate relationships, the friendships, esteem needs, right? So the prestige and feeling of accomplishment and interacting with people, getting a pat on the back from someone, for example, in the workplace, those things are not there. You don't have those hallway conversations or interactions, like you mentioned in the break room, where you talk about things and you can do humble bragging about all the things that you accomplish. Those things are missing, right? And that's the same thing with children, if you really think about it. What's happened for them is they lost their sense of identity in going to school. They don't have that familial place anymore where they knew that they would go to school in the morning, they would have additional parent figure that they could look up to and who would cater to their psychological needs and their love and belonging. From someone who's not a parent and outside of the home, they suddenly lost that. And while we are still trying to do virtual learning and the teachers are doing a fantastic job trying to cope and learn and grow along with the kids, it's hard. They don't have that physical interaction. So the happy chemicals imbalance is there. And then in addition to that, while virtual schooling is all cool, it's routine, right? I mean, it becomes routine and then routine becomes tedious. And so we need to supplement it with some additional ways to help the child develop and also bring that emotional intelligence and empathy concepts into their learning curriculum. And so we, a couple of friends who are agilists and technologists, we all got together, obviously, over Zoom, and we were chatting about ways and mulling about this problem and figuring out how we could do it. And so we all decided to run some social experiments. And I've written about it in an article and that I published recently, where we looked at agile and DevOps technologies and methodologies and so technology constructs, even up to the point of Kubernetes, because Kubernetes magically is supposed to solve is the answer to everything, right? So I wrote a tongue-in-cheek article about Kubernetes, and I'll talk a little bit about it, but there are four key agile methodologies or DevOps methodologies that I feel are really essential in order to supplement and help the child develop. And the first one is iteration planning. Believe it or not, school is an iteration. Your program increment is different. And so what we found out is that if you set your iteration as 1 week, of course, you'll have schoolwork and all those various things there, but the child doesn't really have something to look forward to and get those dopamine hits, get those, accomplishments and serotonin, the feeling of pride that they accomplished something. They can get a lot of kudos from the teacher, but it's, again, in a passive way. It's not direct. And so what we've introduced is actually this thing called a star chart. We have a board in our house, and we've identified, we use three different colors for our for stars for my son. I have a six-year-old boy. On what we track and measure are the additional behaviors, like being good, cleaning up after actions, not throwing a tantrum, not speaking too loudly, all those various things. Things that you want to introduce as habits to the children and help them think about it and be more emotional, having more emotional intelligence. And then divided it into blue stars, which are short-term habits that we want to enforce, and then gold stars, which are long-term. The gold stars are things that give you highest amount of pride, because everyone loves the gold stars and they're yellow. And so it's a matter of pride. And then we, what we've done, and this is by interacting with my son, we negotiated upon the price of a daily reward and a weekly reward. So for the blue stars, like let's say if he gets 4 blue stars in a day, then he gets 2 episodes on television and he gets to watch it. So that's a quick win. Whenever he sees a gold star being placed on the board, he gets that hit of dopamine. It's that accomplishment. And then he gets excited because now he knows that he is one less star to actually watching TV. And then for the gold stars, we've done where if he gets 10 gold stars in a week, then he's into Beyblade, so we play with the bays. And so if he gets 10 gold stars, he gets a Beyblade. And if he gets 15 gold stars, he gets 2 days of Beyblades on the weekend. So those are the weekly things that we have done. But it's not only the positive portion. We are trying to introduce also a risk or a repercussion kind of a model into it. So if he is not good, so let's say he did throw a tantrum, which will happen. I mean, he's 6, right? So if he gets two red stars, he gets a timeout.
Okay.
And in the timeout, we ask him to reflect upon why he got the red star. And then we have a discussion after the timeout about why, what triggered it? Why did he go there? And what happened? So we do some kind of a root cause analysis, which is the other practice that we bring in. It helps them think, and it helps them think about the emotional aspect of things. So this star chart is fun. I mean, he asks me to do this stars as quickly as possible. And so that he can look at it, reflect upon it, and he's excited about the stars. So that's a fascinating thing from a 6-year-old that we've introduced. It's iteration planning. And every PI, the program increment is 1 month. So we change what he earns the blue stars on every month so that it doesn't become a routine and it doesn't become boring. So that was one funny thing.
Yeah, I'm excited. Like, I'm thinking, like, how could I get a gold star, right? Because you're right. The inner child in all of us wants that gold that gold star, and there's probably some application that we could adapt to adults who are also looking for affirmation, but we're also trying to influence changes in thinking and changes in behavior, you know. Yep. Down to the retrospective, right? Why did you throw a tantrum? What could we do better the next time, right? I mean, taking it all the way through, you know, having a retrospective and then doing a little bit of sprint planning along the way, you know, sort of makes some sense. Also reminds me a little bit of the three ways, right? So when we're starting to look at, let's increase flow, shorten feedback, experiment and continue learning, you know, that's embedded in there as well. You know, we chuckle a little bit about the stars, but there is an underlying message here. As a parent trying to avoid children that come away from this with severe anxiety, that come away from this without rules, right? Without rules, or too many rules, right? I mean, there's a fine line between, you know, I need a star for very rudimentary things, but also, you know, kind of avoiding what we all are at risk of is becoming agoraphobics, right? We're afraid to go out, and finding that balance as well. And I think that, again, being a parent right now, 6 years is such a wonderful age, right? But that 6-year-old is going to become a 7-year-old and an 8-year-old and a 9-year-old and a 10-year-old and an adult, right? And a teenager and an adult. And I think that's particularly important. About the use of automation, because I think there's an element here for parents, right, where you want to find the balance between, you know, again, in DevOps, we argue that optimizing automation is a fantastic thing, and it is, but there could be automation overload. So as a parent, how do you find that balance where you want to automate basic tasks, but you also don't want to, you know, have overwhelming automation as well?
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. And that's actually something that we ran an experiment on. It was on emotional check-ins. we wanted to make sure, I mean, emotional states are really impacted in this pandemic times, right? Everyone is under different levels of stress and there are so many things that are happening. The familiarity is lost with people and especially with young children. We want to constantly be aware that they are in the moment and they are mindful about their emotions and they're developing because now they don't have a playground situation where they can exchange emotions and they have small cliques where they can feed off of each other's emotions. So what we introduced was, and a couple of my other friends have also done this, we introduced a mood planner for the kid just to check and make sure that, you know, our child is emotionally present and is emotionally healthy during the course of the day. So what we did is we took one of the applications and we downloaded it, put it on his iPad, and we asked him to automatically enter what he felt like at the beginning of school, during the first break, during lunch, and then just after school when he has to do his homework. And our thought process was if he can continuously keep managing and measuring their emotional status and have them check in, then it would probably help us have much more visibility and, you know, we can pivot or adjust in that day based upon how their state is. So if they had a really crummy day, then probably we, instead of giving extra work to do or chores to perform, probably have a happy event, like maybe ice cream or something like that, just to elevate and have a happier mood. What we found out is while we found it extremely exciting that, you know, we automated emotional check-ins and we didn't have to worry about it, it became a challenge for the children. And then all they did is they were hitting random buttons and it didn't really help the purpose. So what we did instead was we stopped that and said, you know, automating is cool, but it's not going to really help us. What we really want to do is focus on helping the child rather than collecting data. So we abandoned that and we in our house, we switched to something very simple. At the end of the day, when we're giving the stars, we actually call that a spin down. That's the psychological end of the day. It signals that, you know, everyone can relax after that and they don't have to worry about work or school or anything. And we have fun after it. And what we do is after the stars are given, we ask the child how they felt. Or how the child felt at the end of the day. And what we're doing is having the child assess overall how they felt during the day and not obsess over some runaway emotion or some bad moment that occurred for about 5 to 10 minutes that spoiled the entire day for the child. So an overall consensus or aggregate emotional check-in is what we started doing at the end of the day. And so it was a teachable moment where we talked to our kid and said, listen, you might feel bad for a little bit over certain things. You might throw a tantrum. You might get a timeout. All that is fine. But what's really important is at the end of the day, if you can say that that day was happy, that's all that matters. That's all that ultimately matters. So that was a really good teachable moment. And what we learned is too much of data can also be bad. And we as tech parents, and especially being in IT, we want to collect as much of data as possible because we think there are patterns and we think we can assess. But sometimes we want to take a step back and go with just simple things. That was a cool learning.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that, you know, particularly in the technology space, there's a point where what matters most, collecting the data or getting the feedback. And yeah. So, you know, there's definitely a different data point there based on what we're talking about. Hopefully, this situation will, as it exists today, will not exist entirely throughout 2021, although we certainly expect probably first half at least will continue this way. But before we started recording, you know, you used the word evolutionary, and I agree with you. I think that as horrible as this pandemic has been, it has forced us into a parallel universe of sorts, right? It's forced us into the future. And it doesn't feel that in some ways we'll go back. You know, my husband went to an office every day. He got up every morning, got in his car, he drove to the office, came home at a certain time. We don't have a lot of expectations that he will return to the office, even once things have settled down. I think the way people interact with each other, and we're teaching our children that we want them to have real relationships, even if those real relationships today can't be in person, but you also don't want to groom a series of adults who don't know how to be, you know, kind of face to face, human to human. So how do we kind of extend that? How do we, you know, kind of come out of this, however long it takes, and still have healthy adults, healthy children who know how to interact human to human, right? That are not afraid of in-person social situations and that have those human skills to be able to be successful in work and of course in their personal lives. What do we do?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, and it's going to be it's probably going to generate a number of PhDs for people who are going to be studying this for a very long time. I know that for a fact. But I think evolutionary, and I use the word evolutionary because when we started discussing, I was admitting that, you know, I have evolved and I have changed. I've become a very different person compared to what I was in March, because What we have done is we have actually increased the level of humanity within the community, if that makes sense. We are thinking as parts of a whole and not individualistically for the most part. We know that everyone has to pitch in and we all have to try to slay this invisible foe that we are suffering from. And so we have evolved into a state, I would say, where humanity as a whole is looking at things with a different lens. We are thinking how our actions are going to impact. And it's not just, in the past, it used to be climate change, sustainability, all those various things, how it's going to impact. But now this is much more broader. It's like, how am I going to impact my community if I don't take the right amount of secure steps or safety steps involved, social distancing, washing my hands properly, all those various things. The belongingness has evolved into different levels now, I feel. It's not just our family and our inner circle and our friends, but it is also our county, our people all over. It becomes much more humanistic. I feel that is very exciting because people now, they think about humanity at a broader level and a community at a broader level. And then the prestige and the prestige increase is now based upon how you are impacting the community and how you're impacting people. So I think that has also changed. What has also increased is it is overnight democratized the way we interact with people. I mean, the barrier to entry is so low right now. And I know that it's not physical interaction, but it's much more easier to pick up, just send an email and have a video conferencing session with someone anywhere in the world really quickly. And that's opened so many doors of learning, of growth, of interaction, exchange of ideas, you know, sharing each one's creative activities. It's a wonderful place. And I think that's the beauty of the evolution that we're going through right now. It's a lot of it is going to stay. We'll probably go back to some physical interaction because as humans, we are social creatures. We need to have that physical interaction. But I think, like you mentioned, this was inevitable. We would probably have reached some point of it, maybe over four or five years, but this has just accelerated what was to become. And I think not overthinking it, going for the ride, and just being safe and figuring out how we can make things better is all we can do at this time.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, in the beginning, Individual fear was probably front and center, right? How do I protect me? How do I protect my family? Hopefully empathy, right? Being able to look at the lens through other people's lenses. You know, the pandemic affected the whole world. So, you know, having somebody in another country that maybe you interact with or you hear about, you know, really struggling either because of the disease or because of economic fallout or whatever. And again, going back to being a parent, hopefully those are lessons we teach our children, that we're not isolated, right? We are part of a global community, and things like this affect everybody. So we have to exhibit empathy to everybody. So I hope that maybe this accelerates our human skills. I wish we could talk about this for much longer, but you know, we're going to run out of time. So that's exciting. So let's end up, you know, this is the end of the year, right? And so what a year. I mean, just really a year like no other, and it will go down in history as Lord knows what, but it will definitely go down in history as in just uncharted waters for a modern civilization. How do we get through the fact that the year is ending, particularly as parents? And, you know, the end of the year kind of signals an ending, but we also know, or at least suspect, that what we're experiencing now is going to continue into at least part of 2021. We don't know which part or how long. How do you navigate that? How do you navigate the fact that New Year's Eve doesn't mean that things are over?
That's a hard one, especially with everyone going through pandemic fatigue right now and being very tired. I mean, it's 8 months, right? And it's exhausting to constantly be on guard and constantly being trying to be safe. And every interaction that you have, you worry about repercussions of those activities and those interactions. So it is hard. However, I think, As we have done so many times in the past, being hopeful, being optimistic, realizing that there is a horizon where this thing will end, we will be able to reach there. It's just a couple of more months. There is hope. Winter break is coming, so at least for parents, it's going to be much more fun and interaction with the children. The holidays will always bring cheer. It's going to be a little different. It's going to be weird, especially because of the lesser number of interactions. But, you know, it's just a couple more months, and I think we should be able to plow our way through and interact and probably share our ideas, hopes, thoughts, and interactions through various virtual methodologies at this point in time, try to spread cheer that way, because as we have proved, I mean, we have evolved to the point where we can actually share oxytocin and dopamine and serotonin virtually now. So it's an exciting thing, right? You can do virtual high fives, virtual hugs, all those various things. People feel proud, even on virtual mechanisms. So we're able to get those psychological needs. I think if we can continue to do that and continue to understand that we can focus on the positive of things and consider it as a blessing that we're spending more time with our loved ones in close proximity, things that we probably would not, and we're not sitting in traffic and slowly ticking away. Right. Those are positive things that, you know, we can look at and use as fuel to just push through this hump.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's sometimes time to stop and count your blessings.
Yep.
As opposed to focusing on the negative. And that's intentional, right? We have to be intentionally positive, not falsely, but really look around and be grateful for the things that we have. And maybe this year has told us as well. Gautam, yeah. Thank you. You always have such amazing insight, particularly in kind of the humanness that all of us need to look at, from particularly those of us in the tech space. You know, as tech people, the term techie, you know, implies that we live and breathe tech all the time, everywhere, and that somewhere along the way we lost our humanity, and that's not true. And so I always appreciate it when you bring the human spirit, particularly in your role as CTO of a very large organization, you know, just reminding us to be human. And I think that's really important. So thank you. I hope we get to do this again. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
As always, you have an open invitation. So if you're listening, again, I'm with Gautam Palapa, CTO of VMware, talking about applying agility to parenting, but also to being human during very, very uncharted waters. I want to remind you that DevOps Institute is hosting a Global Skill Up Festival. So we feel it's important to celebrate the humans of DevOps. It is the week of December 7th, so it's coming up really soon. Hopefully we'll get to post this before then. And again, we're wishing everyone healthy, safe, connected, end of 2020 and into 2021. I'm Jane Grohl of DevOps Institute, and you've been listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.